Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Attention all stations. Conelrad has declared an alert emergency action message. Prepare to copy. Stand by all stations. Conelrad has declared Contra Radio Network is live and broadcasting. Stand by for this episode.
And good evening. I'm John Jeffers, your host, founder, and executive producer here at the Contra Radio Network. A couple things I want to get out right away. As you've heard maybe on a few episodes when I've called for prepper groups in Southern California who are looking for members to get a hold of me. I've got some people lined up for them. And I actually got an email from an individual who said, hey, we're looking for people. So he did and got a hold of me at ContraRadio@live.com. If you want to participate in tonight's discussion, you can. We have two phone numbers, 516-453-9389 or 855-355-8458. Or if you are tech savvy and you want to get a hold of us on the computer, you can. Just click the Skype button there on the live listen page, and you'll pop up here on my switchboard. Congratulations goes out to Kirk in Southern California. Congratulations on your marriage. He went to Ireland for his honeymoon, and maybe if he's listening, he'll call in. They had just left Paris like a day or so before the attacks took place. So by the time he got back to the United States, it was, you know, in full swing. And he has a very interesting perspective of what was going on in the airports. And I told him, I said, you have had a glimpse of what it might look like. The grid goes down, shit hits the fan, whatever. So maybe if he's listening tonight, he'll call in. Love to hear from him. Couple things. Last episode we talked about, I had to make some clarifications on preppers and patriot issues. I want to make this clear. I know I sound like Obama. I want to be clear about this. So let's be clear. No. We should not, and I'm hearing a lot of politicians saying, we had to put our boots on the ground in Syria. No, we do not. We do not. We have all these Syrian refugees who have fled their country at war. I say, fine, women and children stay here in the United States or wherever they're going to be, you know, settled. The men, guess what? You're going to go back. You're going to fight for your country. I see no reason for them to sit at home or their new place with their families while American men and women leave their families to go fight their war for them. Now, look, we're not talking about a brain drain in Syria. These are the people who have no skills, very little education. And you know damn well, as soon as they come to the United States, they're going to go right to the welfare rolls. And by the way, the Muslim population of the United States is very hardcore Democratic bloc voters. So I don't want to hear any more about, oh, we have to put boots on the ground. Yeah, we're going to put their boots back in the ground. Let them go fight their war for their country. No reason whatsoever should American men and women in the military have to leave their families to go fight someone else's war. It's their country. Go back and fight for it. Okay. This is first. What do we got first? First up is, are you prepared for a France-like attack? We got this from, what was it, Urban Survival and Combat, Jeff Anderson. And he writes that France just got their ass handed to them, big time. The recent attack by ISIS with a well-coordinated attack using several gunmen and human bombs is a wake-up call to the world. These guys are not like anyone else we've had to face before, and they've made their intentions quite clear. Death to all infidels. Oh, and that means you liberal Democrats, too. You're definitely on their shit list. Not just the French. They mean you and me, and they're not going to stop. The days of looking over our shoulder for the next attack are not over. Look, terrorists are known for their patience and planning. Typically, there's a 7-year planning period between major attacks, but ISIS isn't your average terror group, and they're on the fast track to ridding the world of infidels like you and me. If you remember, it was only a few years ago that they were taunting the United States by doing drive-by photobombs of the White House and other potential domestic targets, and a sort of it's only a matter of time message. So here are 4 life-saving tips for an active shooter, ambush, or terror attack. Number 1, know their targets. As devastating as 9/11 was for our country, it's actually not the best target for a terrorist. Oh, sure. Blow up a prominent-sized skyscraper. People stop going into a giant giant skyscraper is no big deal. But start shooting up the food court of 5 shopping malls at the same time, and you strike fear into every single American citizen and shut down an entire economy. By the way, Jeff did 6 years in a nationwide counterterrorism consulting cell for shopping malls. The terrorists already know this fact. So, does that mean you should not go out shopping for Christmas this year? Well, up to you. But I like shopping by Amazon and other online stores myself. Double for me. I'd much rather order it from Amazon or other stores. Send it to me. I don't want to go out there dealing with the crowds. I can't stand it. And when I do go out, it's because I'm not about letting the bastards keep me from doing what I want. So I follow the philosophy of 2. Always be armed. For God's sake, haven't we learned that almost the only way to stop a terrorist or a movie theater shooter is with a gun? Can't talk a terrorist out of dying for his cause, and you don't want the chance of running up on him to tackle him while triggering whatever bomb he's carrying. He wants to die, so do him a favor and send him off to his virgins. Get your concealed carry license, get the training, and wear it every damn day. You and me are the sheepdogs of society that people need to have out there protecting the flock. Number 3, shoot low or get low. Okay, I have to throw in a true tactic in here. Whether it's a terrorist or a depressed shooter in a movie theater who can't get a date, we've seen that these guys come in strapped. Assume that your target will probably either be wearing a bomb or a bulletproof vest. Aim for the pelvic area first. There's lots of bone there to shatter and will take away their structure and mobility while you follow up. The other option is to crouch low and aim at the head if you have the shot. The head is a hard target to hit in an adrenalized state of an attack, and if you miss, you could hit a bystander. Not to mention, my note, heads move during the shooting. They're very hard to hit, but they can be. So, by crouching low and aiming up at an angle, you minimize your exposure while buffering your backstop. Number 4, prepare your gear for an instant attack. Part of being a true protector and survivalist isn't only being ready when the weatherman says a storm is coming. It's about being prepared for the instant attack, the tornado, the flash mob, the terrorist attack, the active shooter. I personally carry 27 pieces of everyday carry survival gear with me at all times. And that's not including my Scram Day Pack. Thing is, you'd never guess that I'm carrying because you don't see it. But it's always there, ready for anything, including escape and evasion, gear for riots, shootings, etc. Think about the items you need to face an instant crisis beyond your gun and expand your EDC gear. For those that are new, EDC is everyday carry. Look, I'm not saying live your life afraid, but the threat is real. So is your need to prepare. Yours in Freedom and Survival, Jeff Anderson, editor, Modern Combat Survival Magazine. Something to think about, folks. We found this one. Where do we find this next article? Where is it? SkilledSurvival.com. SkilledSurvival.com. Why be prepared to survive, also known as PREP. So let me guess. You were born in the United States. You went to public school and got an American education. Maybe you went to college or maybe you didn't. But this point in your midlife years, 30s, 40s, 50s, and you are responsible for others. You have a family to look after, and they rely on you to provide. It hasn't always been easy. You've had your fair share of bumps along the way. But the bottom line, you've strived to live the American dream up until this point, always working hard, taking calculated risks, striving to get ahead, never worrying about the fact that the society in which you live is a fragile proposition at best. You are an American. Things work out for Americans. We have liberty, freedom of speech, justice for all, clean water, sanitary sewers, the best healthcare system on the planet, until recently, air conditioning, unlimited electric power, and natural gas pumped right into our homes. On average, you have maybe a week's worth of food in the house, and you've never worried about keeping more than that. So, here's a summary of some things, some of the striking findings from our 2012 poll of U.S. adults. Here you go. 44% don't have first aid kits. 48% lack emergency supplies. 53% do not have a minimum 3-day supply of non-perishable food and water at home. 55% believe local authorities will come to the rescue if disaster strikes. 52% have not designated a family meeting place if they are separated during an emergency. 42% do not know the phone numbers of all their immediate family members. 21% don't know if their workplace has an emergency preparedness plan. 37% do not have a list of drugs they are taking. 52% do not have copies of health insurance documents. October 26, 2012, the Adelphi University CHI poll emergency preparedness. Why? Because American grocery stores are always full. In your limited experience, this is a natural order of things in America. Now, suddenly, after a couple of decades working, earning, voting, and observing the course of our republic, you are starting to worry. The $1 trillion debt that everyone said was unsustainable when you were a kid is now a staggering $18 trillion and getting larger all the time, by the minute, by the second. Some people still say that it is unsustainable, but what worries you most is that most people in power do not use those words anymore. They either believe it is sustainable, which worries you, or they know it is not, which frightens you. You have to start asking yourself questions like, what happens when the market really collapses? What happens when hyperinflation hits? What happens when the power goes out permanently? What happens when civil unrest turns into widespread riots? What happens when oil production is severely disrupted? What happens when the California drought destroys our food supplies? What happens if a natural disaster strikes or a terrorist attack? You suddenly realize you have a family that will look to you for protection, shelter, food, water, heat, and clothing. And you realize, I have no idea how to provide these things for when the shit hits the fan. You decide maybe it's time to investigate some of this. Time to learn some survival skills while there's still time and electric power to run the internet. The first thing one must ask oneself is simple. Under what conditions do I want to be prepared to survive, and under what conditions do I not? Seems like a silly question, doesn't it? Of course, I want to survive, really. So if you survive the initial exchange of thermonuclear weapons, our cities, our infrastructure, our society is completely destroyed and poisoned with radioactive fallout. You want yourself and your family to survive and thrive amongst the rubble? Look, I don't want to discourage anyone from wanting to live, but it may be a good exercise, nonetheless, to consider all possibility. So this brings us to our second group of questions. What are you willing to do to survive? To ensure the survival of your family, your children, anything you say, really. So when your children are starving, sick on polluted water sources, desperately in need of nutrition, and perhaps scarce medicines, are you willing to cheat, steal, perhaps kill someone else, taking what they have to keep your family alive because you are irresponsible and chose not to do it? No, of course not, you say. You want to be a kinder, gentler, more civilized, prepared survivalist. This is very noble. But keep in mind, civilized citizens and civilization may be gone. I'm not saying one is to break laws and moral codes to survive. But if that is where you draw the line, it is the best that you realize right now and be prepared to survive now, today. There will be those who break laws and moral codes to get what they need, and they may very well try to take what you have. Will you defend yourself and your family? How exactly do you prepare, or how exactly do you plan to be prepared to survive? All survivalist situations begin with one common factor, and that's a hostile environment. The nature of the hostility is what differentiates survival scenarios. Maybe the hostility is rooted in climate, extreme heat, extreme cold, extreme dry, extreme wet. The common factor here is the word extreme, which may not be as extreme as you think. In many parts of the country, we transit through deadly conditions every day for brief moments. The walk from the house to the driveway in sub-zero Minnesota cold, or northern Illinois cold. The walk from Caesar's Palace back to your hotel in 100 degrees Fahrenheit heat. We transit these areas and think nothing of them. We encounter hostile environments every day, but we have the luxury of going inside and getting a cold glass of water or a hot cup of coffee. What if that transit is not so brief? What about the 300-mile drive across Nevada on Highway 50, the loneliest road in America? Hostility could man itself in wildlife, venomous snakes, wolves, sharks, lions, tigers, bears. No. If we are alone in a survival situation, we have many factors to consider and overcome. However, what if the scenario is not just you or your family? What if everyone is trying to survive? Now you must compete with others to survive. You must navigate confrontation with the most dangerous game of all of them, your fellow man. How will you protect yourself and your family? How will you provide? How will you be prepared to survive? All animals in nature have a survivalist instinct. They know how to acquire food, water, and shelter. They survive bitter cold, sweltering heat, blizzards, and thunderstorms. Unfortunately, survival instinct is no longer a human instinct. The will to survive may be an instinct, but whereas the deer, bear, and rabbit are born hardwired to survive the wild, we are not. So for preppers, family survival skills must be learned. Real survival is less about skill set as it is about decision making and preparing. Water acquisition, fire starting, and building shelters are basic skills. Skills are important, but decision making determines how you employ those skills or don't employ them. Each survival situation is unique, fluid, and dynamic. More people have died making poor decisions than those who simply lacked a certain skill. Getting your mind right about survival is the first step to making good decisions. And a little advanced planning doesn't hurt either. So you want to be prepared to survive. Good. You got the right mindset. You got your mind right. Good. You set your limits, moral or otherwise. Now, how are you going to acquire the necessary skills? How are you going to learn good decision making? How are you going to prepare? And those are the questions only you and you alone can answer. What do you think? Yes? No? Yeah? All right. Seems to be a lonely night here on CRN. We got the chat room open, which is another way for you to communicate with us. We'll take a quick break here. We'll be right back in about 53 seconds.
Do you have a wedding, birthday, graduation, holiday party, or other special event coming up? Would you like to impress your friends or coworkers with your own personal bar and bartender? Professional Beverage Service is Northeast Illinois and Southeast Wisconsin's premium beverage service provider. We specialize in providing bars and bar service for all of your event needs. From simple to elegant, a small home party of 25 to a corporate event of 1,000 or more. Need help finding the right appetizers, meals, transportation, DJs, or even hotels? Professional Beverage Service can help with all of your needs. With free event planning services, Professional Beverage Service will make your event a one-of-a-kind, hassle-free success. From big to small, Professional Beverage Service can handle it all. Call 847-899-5594 or go to www.bevservice.com for more details.
Now back to the program.
All right, we are back. Okay. Oh, anything we talk about, I've posted on the Contra Radio Network Facebook page. I'm starting to gotta get with Kirk in Southern Cali. See if we can't get a page on the Contra Radio Network website so we can put links there too as well if you choose to go that route, which I hope you do. Next question. Next article we got came from, what's it called? MoreThanJustSurviving.com. MoreThanJustSurviving.com. It's, when will the shit hit the fan? Well, well, well. Now, that is the question for the ages, is it not? We would all love to know that question, have the answer at least. All right. As much as possible, as much as people like to predict when the shit will finally hit the fan, there's absolutely no way of knowing for sure when it will, if it will, or what exactly will happen when it does. And that's really the point of prepping, the reason why preppers exist. If you know when each and every single emergency situation is going to take place before it takes place, if you know how long the emergency will last and how bad it will be, what you'll need during that emergency and where the best place to be located during it is, there honestly would be no point to prepping years in advance for that emergency situation. All you need to do to get yourself through the emergency both safely and happily is to merely add the few specific items you'll be needing. A plane ticket, a camping stove, a propane heater, whatever. To your shopping cart a month or two before the emergency begins, and voila, crisis averted. But the world doesn't work that way. And it's because we can't predict when emergencies will pop up, where they'll take place, how long they'll last, or how bad they'll be, that many of us feel compelled to prepare. If we don't prepare, after all, we stand the chance of being knocked down by all the terrible things life, politics, nature, and economics can throw our way. I don't know about you, but right now I kind of feel like it's pouring right now. So the next time you think to yourself, when will the shit hit the fan? Or see someone else try to answer that very question, just stop and take the time to consider the fact that we really can't know. Not being able to know for certain means that the question, when will the shit hit the fan, doesn't really matter. Why? Whatever estimate is given, no matter how backed up by evidence it may appear to be, is still pure stipulation. Geographers can't tell you with 100% certainty when a natural disaster will take place, and economists can't tell you with 100% certainty when an economic crisis will take place. No matter how confident they appear to be, and although it's easy to point fingers at the causes of an economic crisis after the crises have taken place. Really, if we knew with absolute certainty that something bad was coming long enough before the bad event, we would have been able to prevent or avoid the problem in the first place. So, if you do sit around asking yourself the question, when will the shit hit the fan, what you're doing is wasting a great deal of your time, valuable time you could actually be spending on preps or expanding your learning in ways that will help you to be better prepared. It only takes about 15 minutes to go through your winter emergency supplies list and to make sure you've got everything you need in case of a terrible snow or ice storm in the upcoming months. Similarly, it only takes a few minutes a day to grow your survival and preparedness knowledge. I see Gus3873 has logged in. Welcome to the Contra Radio Network. Appreciate it. Glad you're here. So it's only a short time to stay up to date on survival news. Time is much better spent in these ways than spent making up or searching for hypothetical guesses with regards to a particular month or date when the shit will finally hit the fan. Time spent preparing is productive. Time spent predicting is quite the opposite. Good evening, Casey. I see you've logged in here from New Orleans. Glad you're here. Guest 3873 has logged out. So be it. Glad you're here. Thanks for joining us. Okay. What I want to ask you, Casey. Oh, that was you. Okay, you are guest 3873. Very good. I'm glad you're here, Casey. Question for you, Casey. As long as I got you here and I know where you're at. I understand last week Syrian refugees has arrived in the port city of New Orleans. Is that correct? The reason I'm asking that is apparently one of those Syrian refugees disappeared and no one knew where to find him until he popped up in Washington, D.C. the next day. Yes and no. All right, you got to call in, guy, because I got questions, and I want the people to hear this because I think it's important. Just push the Skype button, man. There were not 10,000. All right, how many actually landed? More like 14, okay. So 14 Syrian refugees made it to New Orleans, okay. Very well. And one of them disappeared, all right. If you'd like to interact with Casey and ask him questions about what's going on down there, he's the only person I know that's listening in. And get a hold of him, you can join the chat room. Be more than happy to have it. So, and the reason that the Louisiana State Police found the guy in Washington, D.C. was not due to federal help. They actually were able to get him on his own. All right. Here we go. 30 signs that you're one of those crazy preppers. That's right. Crazy preppers. Oh, where did we get this one? I don't remember where we got it. All right. And it's unfortunate. I should have thought I had it on there, but we don't. With all the recent talk in the news about doomsday preppers and the demonization in the media, you have to be aware that you're considered a little different. The fact you are self-reliant is such an oddity to most that, frankly, they find you to be either nuts, a little bit scary, or both. According to the U.S. government, we are all extremists on the verge of committing depraved acts of terrorism. And if you don't believe me, listen to the news tonight. Because now they're all saying that not only do we have a moral obligation to take in the Syrian refugees, and I don't know where they got the idea this is a moral obligation. I'd like to know where they got that from. But that white males are more likely in the United States to commit acts of terrorism. Okay. Are you one of those crazy preppers? Here are the top 30 signs, should you ever be the subject of a nationwide manhunt, that you too will be considered a crazy prepper on the loose. Number one, pantries are so mainstream, you have food stashed in strange places in every room of the house. Number two, you have enough toilet paper to get through a year of uncomfortable digestive upsets occurring with six people simultaneously. Number three, speaking of which, you possess at least three different ways to use the bathroom, only one of which is an actual bathroom. Number four, your kids know what OPSEC means at the age of four. Number five, you have topographical maps of your area, plural. Number six, when you're forced to interact with the others, you feel like you're awkwardly censoring your true opinions. Number seven, you think nothing of treating an injury or illness yourself because, what if there is no doctor? Number eight, paintball is no longer just a fun way to spend an afternoon. It's called training. Number nine, with every major purchase, you contemplate going off. You contemplate going for the off-grid version. Number 10, you have more manual tools than power tools. Number 11, you've washed entire loads of laundry by hand for either necessity or practice, and not just your dainties, we're talking about jeans and stuff. Number 12, your kids are not afraid of guns or fingers pointed like guns or pastries in the shape of guns or drawings of guns. Number 13, when house hunting, you look for multiple heat and water sources. I'm guilty of that. Number 14, you store food in buckets, lots of buckets, like maybe in a whole room full of buckets. Number 15, you garden with the determination and time commitment normally reserved for endurance athletes training for an Ironman triathlon. Number 16, if you don't have a water source on your property, you have to put in miles of footwork searching for one nearby and have mapped multiple discrete routes to and from the source and figured out how to haul the water back to your house on each route. Number 17, your first instinct when hearing about some event on the mainstream news is skepticism. False flag event, anyone? 18, you believe that FEMA camps are real and that you are most likely on the list. Well, if I am on that list, I'm sure I'm in good company. Number 19, instead of CNN, you have alternative news sites bookmarked in your favorites on your computer. 20, you have enough coffee, tea, favorite caffeinated item of choice to last you through three apocalypses. 21, you have enough over-the-counter medication stashed away to outfit a small-town pharmacy. 22, you have an instructive mistrust of most cops or anything working for an alphabet agency. 23, you could sink a ship with the weight of your stored ammo. 24, looking for a fun weekend outing with the kids? Forget amusement parks. The shooting range is where it's at. 25, when the power goes out, you calmly light the candles and proceed with whatever you have been doing previously. Number 26, a long-term power outage is called practice. 27, if a like-minded person comes over to your house, they'll realize you are one of them by seeing your reading material. Other folks won't even notice. The FBI would call your copy of The Prepper's Blueprint and your James Wesley Rawls fiction subversive literature. 28. Your children carry a modified bug-out kit in their school backpacks. 29. You can't dehydrate food with a single-minded fervor of an Amish grandmother's facing a 7-year drought. Number 30. Calling 911 is not part of your home security plan. I can identify with many of those. All right, it's moving right along. Oh, where did we find this one? Man, I'm really losing here because I don't like to use these things. All right, recognizing the sound of gunfire. All right. With all the recent active killer events happening worldwide, I'm continuing to see reports of the exact same phenomenon. People don't recognize the sounds of gunfire when they are being shot at. In almost every mass shooting, victims report that they heard a loud noise but thought it was some other more innocuous sound. In a recent school shooting, Jordan Coates, a student at the school, stated, "My back was to the door. I heard a pop and thought it was a bag because people do that." He was in the same room as the shooter and heard the shots. His first instinct was to rationalize the sounds as being from something more familiar. He thought the gunshots were actually plastic bags being popped by fellow students. Jordan is not alone. In the Oikos, California college shooting last April, where 10 people were shot, victims reported thinking that the gunshots were fireworks. The same was true when two students began shooting inside Columbine High School. In the Beslan School massacre, people thought the initial shots were popping balloons. Victims trapped inside the Virginia Tech classroom building during that school shooting believed that they were hearing construction noises, not gunshots. It is important to quickly be able to distinguish gunfire from other less lethal sounds. The faster you or your children can recognize the sounds of gunfire, the better your chances of escape and survival will be. Gunfire inside a building doesn't sound like gunfire at the shooting range. I've participated in numerous active shooter training scenarios where I've been tasked with finding the shooter inside a large building. Even when the person playing the role of the shooter is firing full power blank cartridges, it is difficult to locate him inside a school or office building. The shots sound muffled, and the direction from which they are being fired is difficult to determine. Sometimes, you won't be able to hear the shots at all. I remember playing the role of the active shooter for a neighboring police agency's training scenario. I was firing blanks from an AR-15 rifle in a vacant multi-story office building. The officers trying to find me did not even hear the shots from just one floor below my location. Okay. Casey, hold on. Casey reports you've tried the Skype button twice now. Why am I not surprised? Apparently, Blog Talk Radio has once again struck with a fervor. I just can't stand it. Just can't stand it. You know, other times it works fine. Sometimes it doesn't work at all. Casey, try calling in on the free phone line. Get your pencil and paper, man. Here, I'll put it in the chat room so you can have it. Let's do it this way. 855-355-8458. See if that pops up. See if that one does. Now let's go back to it. Not only does this muffling issue affect potential victims, it also changes police response. Many police active shooter response courses teach officers to run to the sound of the guns. That tactic doesn't work when you don't hear the gunfire. If you're a police officer reading this, I strongly suggest that you abandon this approach. Rather than relying on hearing the shots, you should be gathering intelligence on the shooter's location by looking for blood, empty cartridge cases, and smoke. Asking the victims or fleeing students where the shooter is will be a vital tactic. Don't rely solely on your ability to hear the shots as your means to find the gunman. So what can you do to avoid the misidentification of gunshots and increase your odds of escaping an active shooter event? Here are some suggestions. First, acknowledge the fact that an active shooter event can happen anywhere. If you hear loud popping noises, don't allow denial or rationalization to convince you that they aren't gunshots. If you hear loud popping sounds in a public location, assume they are gunshots and immediately come up with an escape plan. Be cautious of wearing iPod or stereo headphones in a public place that may be the site of a shooting. Many shots are difficult to hear inside a building. They are far more difficult to identify while wearing headphones. So maybe they're not such a good idea after all. I assume that most folks reading this page are shooters and have at least heard the sound of gunfire at some point in their lives. If you haven't heard the sounds of gunshots, please have a friend take you shooting or visit a shooting range just to hear the sounds. Different firearms make different sounds. A .22 rifle does not make the same sound as a 9mm handgun or a 12-gauge shotgun. Try to hear several different types of guns. You don't have to learn to identify the caliber. Only recognize that shots are being fired. If you know what guns sound like to your children, they need to know too. Take them to the range. Even if you have fired a weapon many times, you should recognize that guns fired indoors sound different than guns fired outside. Go visit an indoor shooting range. The muffled sounds that you can hear from the outside or from the front room outside the range are most similar to the sounds of gunfire inside a building. Learn to recognize them. Remember, you don't have to know the calibers, just the sound of it. If you have control over a large building, it would be very useful to wait until the building is empty and have a friend fire some blank rounds from various locations inside. Get a feel for what the shots sound like and try to locate the shooter. It'll be much more difficult than you think. This exercise can also be done inside your house. Please be cautious not to alarm any neighbors when you try this. You don't want to hear the sounds of police gunfire when they think there's an active shooter inside your house or office. Oh, good evening, Kirk. Glad you're here. I was talking about you earlier. I'm going to get back to you in a moment. Quickly recognize the sound of gunfire is a critical skill for surviving an active shooter. Unfortunately, it is something most people never think about. Don't be caught in the web of denial and rationalization like so many past shooting victims. Learn to identify shots being fired and have an escape plan. All right, Kurt's here. Kurt, congratulations on your marriage. Welcome back. I got Casey from New Orleans on in the chat room as well. Kirk, I was just telling the beginning of the show that you had the unique perspective of, thankfully you left Europe before the Paris attacks. However, by the time you got to the United States, you had a chance to go through one of our major airports in the country and get a firsthand glimpse of what the grid down, or I should hits the fan scenario, might look like. If you could, I'd love to have you call in so you could describe for the people who aren't on the chat room and those that will download this podcast much later, which, by the way, we're going to talk about. Apparently, Casey's reporting that the Skype button is not functioning properly on the live listen. So, why don't you give me a call in on the free line so it doesn't cost you anything. I posted it up there. Okay. And I posted it up on the chat room, 855-355-8458. Love to hear, because I think people need to hear what you saw. Because it was very interesting. I just want to share it with you. That's why I think it's important that we all get a chance to hear. Because I was not going anywhere near those places. I live about 30 miles north of O'Hare Airport here in the Chicago area. And I hate going there anyways. I see Casey's typing. What I want to talk to you about now is collapse tip number 42, protecting your guns. In case you're wondering, Kirk is my graphics artist. He's that makes all the great graphics you guys see, especially he's working on the new logo for the network. That'd be really cool. And plus, he has some, I don't know how he does it, but he has all the toys and all that to do it. So he comes up with some really cool stuff. Collapse tip 42, protecting your guns. This is interesting. I know there's a bunch of controversy right now about our ability to keep our warm, live fingers on our weapons before they're pried from our cold, dead hands. I only wish more survivalists realized you could be disarming yourself by simply ignoring this one critical concept, and that is firearms break. They do. You see, having all the guns, ammunition, magazines in the world won't help you if a critical spring, a firing pin, or bolt breaks. And when you think about it, the harsh conditions of a collapse scenario make it much easier for your rifle or pistol to fail on you when you need it the most. That's me. Murphy will strike, and he'll stick it up my ass and break it off. I guarantee it. Case in point, and look, it's a true story. True story coming up. Is this. I'm a big Sig Sauer guy. Big Sig guy. However, they have that Pro Model 2022. What a piece of garbage that was. True story. On the range. Hold on. Alrighty. What have we got here? Casey!
Hey, John. How are you?
How are you, sir? Thank you for calling in. You got in. Fantastic.
Yeah, it took a little bit, but I was able to get on through.
Excellent, sir. Excellent, excellent. How are things down in New Orleans?
Finally getting a little chilly. It's been hot, but it's finally getting just a slight nip in the air.
Right. When you say nip, give me a number on the temperature gauge.
I think Saturday is supposed to touch about 37.
Oh, okay. All right. That's about what it is here right now. It's nasty next 24 hours.
But that's only about 4 o'clock in the morning. It'll hit that. By the time we hit 8 o'clock, we're up to 72 again.
Oh, God. I got to get back to my southern homeland. I have to. I can't stand it up here in Illinois. Can't stand it.
We always said we had two seasons here, summer and Mardi Gras, you know?
All right, Case. I have not heard from Marshall in a while. Is he still breathing?
He is. That's what it took me a little bit getting on. I was talking with him on the cell. He's working tonight over at the firehouse, and he's misplaced his bag with his computer. So he's kicking himself in the butt. He's been misplaced it now for about 3 days. So
it's gone.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's gone. Just chalk it up that you won't do it again. I'm telling you. I'm so glad you called in. Now, I know you used to do the survival post.
Yes.
And then you said life got, you know, I understand that, you know, your life gets busy, you start doing other things, and next thing you know, it falls by the wayside. Tell me about the survival post.
Well, the survival post started as a concept of just myself and another individual by the name of Jonathan Pinkert. And he was the owner, operator, CEO of Louisiana School of Bushcraft, and I was one of his instructors.
Okay.
And it started out just trying to be a podcast that just dealt with, you know, survival skills and how to translate that over to, you know, an audio-based podcast, you know, because a lot of people don't have the time or the means to attend a class with any survival school or, you know, prepper school. Mm-hmm. So they get a lot of information from podcasts, you know, case in point, your podcast.
Sure.
So we started that, you know, just to see if it would work, to see if we could really kind of bridge that gap. And as it progressed, you know, we brought Marshall on, you know, the 504 farmer. He does a lot of urban homesteading and prepper skills on that nature. Well, JP's life got in the way. He moved off to Texas. He worked in the oil field. So that kind of like it gradually pulled apart. Whereas me and Marshall kept it going, but it got really tough. And I went back to college and got my degree. But once I got out, got a real big boy job, I guess you would say. And it got really tough to try to maintain that level of consistency and quality that we were, you know, wanting to put out with the podcast. So That's where we're at today.
Okay. You are welcome. Do an episode or episodes anytime you want here on Contra Radio Network. Anytime.
Nice, I appreciate that. I'd greatly appreciate that.
And you can even bring Marshall along.
Oh, he'd love it. He's already been telling me. I think every time we get on, call in. I was like, there will be a time because, you know, I don't want to interrupt what you're saying because a lot of the stuff that you're saying, you know, the articles you're getting this from, I mean, it's quality stuff. And when you're on a roll, you're on a roll and you don't want to break that. You know, I get it. So I wait for this prime opportunity. I got on tonight and I thought it was just you and I. I was like, all right, I'm calling in tonight. So.
Well, Kirk is going to be getting back. He says he's got to go find, he wants to get on somewhere else because he says the internet sucks where he's at right now. But, yes. Do you want to start up your survival post again?
Well, me and Marshall have some things in the work, and I'd like to, you know, speak with you offline about that, but that's for another time.
That's not a problem. Just, you know, look, I could do the way Blog Talk Radio is set up, I could do one episode per day. Just tell me when you want to do it, and I'll give you the slot. Have at it. And I'll give you all the information to log in and all that stuff. You'll love it. It's actually a pretty good system. I've checked some other systems out, and tell the truth, I really can't find one better than this one. I do enjoy this one, and it's really easy to use. Good Lord.
I mean, I know Marshall and I have scoured the internet looking for something similar to Blog Talk. There were a few out there, but, you know, like you said, this one, you know, I think for what it does has the best amenities, you know, for hosting a podcast.
I agree with you. You know, I was in New Orleans a year after Katrina had hit, and the wife and I were driving. We went through Slidell, and I think it was called. I think there was a small town. It's right through Slidell. You get over Lake Pontchartrain, and the causeway there. And I'm thinking, was it North New Orleans, I think?
New Orleans East?
Maybe that was it, New Orleans East. And I got to tell you, people, if you want to get a glimpse of what off the grid looks like, and it was I'm driving down, was it I-10? We were on I-10 there.
Uh-huh.
And there was it a Kmart? The sign was knocked down in the parking lot. And this was in the evening. And so the sun was just starting to go down, and I'm like, what the hell is that, man? It's been a year. And I'm looking around. All of a sudden, I noticed the grass, because you could see, you know, a lot of the subdivisions, the housing, the residential areas are right there by the interstate. You can't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
The grass was as tall as I was. Lights were on in the houses, and cars were parked in the driveways, on the streets, just like it was like a biological weapon had gone off. Nothing alive was moving. It was the most eerie thing I've ever seen. Lights were on, cars were there, and nobody, and I mean nobody, no cars were moving. It was the most eerie thing I've ever seen, and I told my wife, I said, hey, Missy, this is what it would look like after a, you know, biological attack where there are no people left.
Right.
And
it was probably the best prime example of a post-apocalyptic, any type of scenario. You know, it was... Yeah.
All right. Apparently, Kirk is back. He's on the chat room.
Yep.
Maybe. You know, if Kirk calls in, I could put everybody on. Anybody that calls in.
Oh, nice.
I keep adding people. So, like I said, you know, that one night we had five of us rolling in the chat room, we could put everybody on.
Oh, that was a good night. I still would like to do that round table.
Oh, it would be great. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Plus, you know, we all start rolling, and it'd be a ball. I think the people would enjoy it. Plus, get more people in there. Speaking of which, I want to thank you for calling in, because I was getting like, oh, come on, guys. Don't let me down now.
I know that feeling. Trust me.
Oh, I know. But, you know, I've done it like this for a while. Sometimes it's only been the last 60 days. I don't know what's going on. I think people are scared because my numbers have jumped up. I'm listening.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, just so you know, and I want to thank you listeners out there. Thank you. Thank you. There's been an increased traffic on the Facebook page. We have over 5,000 listens in the last 30 days, and over 28,000 downloads for the podcast.
Man, that's
so
excellent.
I'm sure there are other people out there who are, you know, who do a lot more than I do. But, you know, what do? I sit upstairs in the bedroom. My house, I've turned into a studio here. And so it's just me. So it's like, hey, for me, it's cool. I really like it, but it's really starting to come together more and more. I start to see some ideas that we could do it, for example. Oh, hold on. We got someone else coming in. Hold on. Go ahead. You're on the air. Who's this?
Hey, John. It's Todd from the road.
Todd, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, Todd, you're on the air with Casey and myself.
Hey, Todd, how are you, man?
Good, Casey. How you doing, brother?
Doing great, brother.
You're on the road to where, Todd?
Well, I'm on the road home trying to get ahead of the storm.
Okay, my next question. Where were you?
Detroit, again.
Oh, Detroit. Did you turn off the lights when you left?
No, I left them on. There's a few people left, very few, but there are a few left.
Did you lock the gate when you left?
Well,
you need to lock the gate when you leave.
Someone's got the key. Someone's got the key, and they're running around with it. But I did get a T-shirt that says, I'm so tough, I vacation in Detroit.
All right. Tato, just so you can start working on this, I was thinking, because how do these guys get around when they do these gun giveaways? You know, like, you know, we're having a contest, we're giving away an AR-15, or we're giving away whatever. How do they get around all the regulations and stuff for the ATF and all that crap?
There's no regulations to it. You want
what?
To run a giveaway, you could run a giveaway. Just make sure you stipulate that whoever wins has to satisfy all local, state, and federal laws in order to comply.
That's it?
That's it.
Yeah, that's a new one on me. I don't know.
So you're telling me that by me buying it and then doing a giveaway is not a straw man purchase?
No, not at all. Because you're, now, probably how I would recommend you do it, and I'm not a lawyer, nor is this legal advice, all right, purchase it and never take delivery from the dealer, the federal dealer. And then that person that deals, you essentially, you're giving them a gift certificate to that store equivalent to the purchase of said firearm.
Okay, so you're not really...
You're not doing the transfer, no, sir.
I see. So in other words, you're just sending a gift certificate to whatever federal firearms license gun store they're at, so that's how they're getting around it. Okay.
Or
I get it now.
The gun store of your choosing. We can call it a gift certificate.
Oh, I see. Huh. Interesting. Okay, that's how they did it. Oh, okay, because I was thinking, how are they doing getting around this? So, hell. Well, there you go, Casey. You and I have now just learned something new tonight.
I know, that's pretty neat. That's awesome.
I never
thought of that. Yeah.
Neither did I. All right, Kirk.
I would call in to give you a little news from the road.
Give me some news from the road. I'm always interested in that.
A couple of weeks ago, I had two interesting experiences. One, another airline bites dust. I have added Spirit Air.
Oh, God.
My list of travels with a firearm. Easy,
really?
Easy. No issues whatsoever, other than the fact of the cost of the baggage and Spirit Airlines in general. But that's besides the point. Exactly the same directions as I gave on your show a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
You must declare that it is unloaded. They will fill out some paperwork. It must be a hard shell case. It must be locked. And TSA is going to check your bag while you stand right there.
Okay.
Once they check it, they say, have a nice flight. You're on your way. So,
really?
Yep.
Okay.
No problem.
There you have it, Spirit Air. Easy.
Spirit. The other thing I ran into was my lack of preparedness. On board the airline, I was witness to a medical emergency.
Okay.
In the air.
Okay.
And the good news is the person is fine, doing well. And there was a doctor and two ICU nurses on board the plane. So
wow.
God was looking down on this person that night because it was the professionals were there.
Without a
what
doubt.
What I learned was never be afraid to travel with your first aid supplies, whatever
okay.
they are. Because flight attendants, as professional and as highly trained as they are, did not know what was in their first aid supply.
Wow.
That's important. That's important to know.
Wow. Yeah.
It took them 40 minutes. 40 minutes to say, man, I wish I had an IV bag. And the flight attendant said, oh, there's more than the bag. 45 minutes to start an IV.
Mm. Wow.
Now,
jeez.
ICU nurse threw that needle like a dart, so it went in real fast and they got it started. But be conscious of what's going on. Bone up. I found a hole in my training that I'm going to promptly fill. So earlier in the show, you were talking about always learning, always spending those crucial few minutes.
Right.
I learned it firsthand, absolutely.
You, sir, are type A. You are type CRN. Always listening and always willing to learn. And that's
good.
Yeah,
and a little bit of a control freak too, so.
You know what? To be prepper, you gotta be a control freak. Not that you can control the situation, but you can actually control the ideas that I will survive this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, as opposed to just, I'll wait for FEMA to get here, I'll wait for the National Guard to roll in with my MRE and whatever else. No, we are all control freaks to a certain degree, as we should be. The question is, how many of us are OCD?
I'm taking a little mantra from your neck of the woods. Casey, I'll get your opinion on this as well. I learned rather young, lead, follow, or get out of the way. And I've adopted and changed it to lead, follow, or just stay the hell out of the way.
What do you think, Casey?
Guys, I apologize. My Skype was messed. Oh, man.
No, dude, I haven't lost you at all so far. So he was just saying that he's adopted a new philosophy, and that is lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Oh, he dropped off again. Darn it. That's all right. It happens sometimes. I see Kirk is online. Kirk says he's OCD. Kirk, I think you would have to be because of the details that you put in to your graphics are amazing. there you go. Okay. Yeah, I just saw your line there. So how far are you from home right now, Tato?
About 3 hours.
3 hours?
Yep.
Well, they say we're supposed to get, was it 5 to 7 tomorrow? Is that right? Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, starting tomorrow night. So I'll be home in time to get up tomorrow morning and do a little prep around the house, make sure we're ready for it. Then be able to go out and play it. Yeah.
Well, hopefully it won't stick around long. I understand come Monday or Tuesday it's supposed to be up in the 40s, so all that crap will just melt away. I just can't stand winter anymore. All right, Casey's back on. Let me get him back in here. Hey, Casey, you back, brother?
Oh, I'm back. I was hearing about 3-4 different conversations just a minute ago. I had to log off. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Kirk says, tell Todd to swing by Southern California. No storms here. La-dee-da, Kirk.
Kirk, no storms there. I would absolutely love to stop by Southern California for the weather, but living in the free state, sarcasm included there, of Illinois,
Tyranny state, this sucks.
Yeah,
hey,
we
Kirk,
actually get a flip hole
to
California.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get Kirk to Skype in or call in, because I want him to tell the listeners what happened at the airport when he was coming back from Europe a couple days ago. Yeah, he's able to email me, and it was just a real interesting observations he had, and I'd like him to share it with everybody so everybody has an idea, what he had caught a glimpse of. Something similar to what you were talking about, Casey. You know, we were talking about East New Orleans there, driving down and just lights on. It was just bizarre. And it was about, like you said, it was about as close to a grid down situation as you're going to see. But that was before I was even a prepper. And so I had a chance to actually sit there, wow. Now I look back and I'm thinking, oh, man, if I could have just known what I was looking at the time, I probably would have taken pictures and done some other things, but I didn't do it. So I didn't do it. But you lived down there, and you lived through it, correct?
That I did. And at the time of Katrina, I was working for the local sheriff's department, so I saw it firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. I know when I was down there like a year later, they had just, they were having a hell of a time just with all the garbage and the crap. It was just unbelievable. It was like, it's a year later and they're still dealing with this. And of course, the federal government was actually no help. The EPA was actually,
well, it wasn't only federal government. Our local government was no help either. it literally turned into, you know, free for all, fend for yourself kind of mentality down here. You hear the stories of, you know, all the good and all the bonding together. Yeah, you bonded together in your little group. They did leave that part out. you know, your neighborhood came together, and I think Marshall typed it in a couple episodes ago. Yeah, there were signs, you loot, we shoot, you know, and they were dead serious. You read, you know, the listeners who read, you know, Rawls or Mark Goodwin's series or One Second After, I mean, they're sentries at the front of each subdivision with, you know, armed rifles. You know, you don't get in unless you can produce an ID that has that address in that neighborhood. It was definitely, you know, you watch my back, I'll watch yours, and we'll make rounds, and, you know, flashlights coming through the back of your yard 1-2 o'clock in the morning. That's just your neighborhood, you know, making rounds to make sure nobody's taking your generator, you know, because we had people coming up with their riding lawnmowers, park their riding lawnmowers where your generator was, leave the riding lawnmower running, take your generator.
Really?
So, because you got right. used to that hum being in your backyard or in your front yard or wherever you had it. Well, they bring their riding lawnmower up, leave it running, take your generator.
You know what? I have to admit, that's clever.
It is. It's very clever.
I like to give credit where credit's due. And, you know, that's just pretty damn clever. I would have never thought about that.
Yeah, it's pretty ingenious.
Oh, yeah. And how long were you guys doing your patrols and stuff for? About what?
I was pulling 16-hour shifts. So,
God.
During that time period, when Katrina hit, I was actually in the jail, and we had called in 3 different teams, and we were pulling 16 hours, sleeping in the jail. We had already shipped off inmates to, you know, Angola and other various locations, neighboring states and within the state. And we'd finish with that, and we would hit the streets. And I was actually assigned to Slidell at that time. And we were going through Eden Isles, which is an area down where just before you get across over onto the lake. So I was patrolling that area. I mean, you know, we're driving past sailboats that are, you know, two miles inland, sailboats sitting on the side of the road. It's a pretty amazing sight. It really is.
Surreal. It just has to be surreal. Now, what was I going to ask you? I forgot. It happens to me sometimes. I'm getting old.
Well, that's that part-timers. Kind of like all-timers. Oh. It just happens part-time.
Well, that's okay. I'm all right with it. Todd, you got anything you want to ask?
I got a question for Casey. I've learned from your first-hand experience at Katrina, what's the one greatest thing that you take away from it to prepare for? Something similar.
Well, I kind of have 2 answers for that. One is from the mental mindset. It's just to be observant, be aware of your surroundings, be aware of what's going on. Look at body language, look at attitudes of individuals when stuff like this goes down, and look at their mental mindset of how they're taking the situation and how they're dealing with the situation, because that person could, you know, on a normal day could be your best friend, but when stuff like that happens and they get into that stressful situation, they can be your greatest enemy. The second thing I took away from it is, no matter what, and I don't care, you know, you're going to have people say that preppers are crazy, lunatics, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's you don't want to be in the store when your weather lady says, get out of here now. You will die if you stay. You don't want to be the one in the store with everybody else trying to get food at exactly the same time. So be prepared. Be vigilant. Mm-hmm.
Good question. Kirk, I was telling you, Kirk from Southern Cali was telling us about, I think he said he was at Chicago's O'Hare, and because he has switched planes from Europe. And he said there were loudspeaker voices letting everyone know they can refund their tickets or go elsewhere. Crowds were around the TVs, and just a somber panic on everyone's face about their traveling. Now, I think Kirk is going to try to get in on our next show. We can talk about it then. But I think what I'm just thinking about it, and that would be, he was at O'Hare Airport. Okay. I think what struck me about what he just said is the somber panic. They were on the other side of the planet from where the attacks took place, but yet they were under that panic, the stress, and nothing had even happened anywhere near them. Yes, and Kirk says it's just real creepy. I think exactly what you're saying, Casey, is very important, and that is you don't want to be that guy with the herd trying to get into the stores and get whatever it is you're going to get. Have it ahead of time, people. That's why it's called prepping. You don't have to be a survivalist. But let me ask you this, Casey. People down there now, do they all have their own little food catch and water catch by now? Their own supplies?
If they don't, they just moved here. They just don't know. You know, they just got here. They have no clue what they're getting themselves into. But I would say that, you know, if you survived Katrina and you still live here, Bubba, you got a pantry full, you know.
Kirk says it was like they were freaking out but depressed. The tone was crazy but felt like the beginning of a shit hits the fan scenario. And he says he can't imagine the things that you saw, Casey.
Oh, it was pretty eye-opening, to say the least. You know, but what Kirk is saying about people freaking out and also being depressed, you know, and it's crazy, felt like something was about to happen. That, to me, that goes back to what I was saying with, you know, be observant. See what that person next to you is going to be like, you know. Is it somebody right. You can team up with or someone you need to get the hell away from?
That's important. Get the hell away from them because you don't know what they're going to do. You don't even
right.
You don't even know. Actually, let's be real honest here. Do you really know the guy living next door to you? I mean, do you really know him? I mean, I can say I know a lot of people, and I don't know what they do. For all I know, they could be having people in the well in their basement, for all I know, play Buffalo Bob with them.
It puts the lotion on its skin, yeah.
That, exactly. I mean, you don't know. Do you really know those people? I know a guy across the street from me, on the back of his pickup truck, you know, in the back window, he says, you know, Second Amendment with an image of an AR-15. You know what? I'm okay with that. And there's a very good possibility that this shit ever did hit the fan. I'd walk across the street. But the problem is we got a really busy street. But I'd make it across there. And my guess is, and he works for the post office, which I even like. I like that even better. So I've always liked the guy. He's always come by and he's plowed our driveway out when it's gotten a lot of snow. But the thing of it is, how well do we really know the people that live on either side of us?
True. True. I know me and Marshall have talked about that on several occasions. You know, he's a, you know, outgoing guy. He'll go next door, knock on the door, introduce himself, see if somebody working in the backyard, he'll go give him a hand. And I'm on the, you know, complete polar opposite. You know, I'll wave at him as I walk in my door to lock it, you know.
Marshall is the quintessential victim of Southern culture, and I don't have a problem with that.
Oh, Marshall's a great guy. Love him to death.
He's the guy that will literally give you the shirt off his back if that's what you need.
Yeah, I got two or three of them here, you know.
I believe it. You probably have his computer. You just want to torture him for a little bit. Now, Tato, what would you think would be the first thing you'd be doing? Hey, Todd, you there, bud?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
First thing I do, fire up the radio. Start making contact, get my connections going, keep the information flowing.
Which radio?
All of them.
All of them. Okay.
I'm an amateur radio operator, so when we talk about Katrina, in the back of my head, I remember the two things. The amateur radio community was the only group out of the Katrina report to receive an A+. 2 hours after the storm had passed, amateur radio operators were in the affected area passing health and welfare traffic. It took Nextel 7 days to get a functioning cellular network.
Oh, I believe it.
Oh, yeah. Katrina was when where I learned how to text. That's the dead truth. Because I was too terrified to text before because it was, you know, very expensive and I didn't want anything to do with it. And then all of a sudden, that was the only thing you could do was text.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. That was it.
Huh.
And if, I mean, you were lucky if you knew somebody with a satellite phone.
Oh, hell. Those are like gold, man.
Oh, yeah.
Now, did you have a chance to interact with any of the FEMA guys or anything when they came in the area? Or?
No. No, uh-huh. I did not. I did have an opportunity. I called one of my old supervisors for an ambulance service I worked with over in Texas. And I called him up, was able to get out to him probably about a week and a half after Katrina. And I told him, I was like, man, y'all have to come down here. Y'all have to come down here. Send units now. And he did. He no questions asked. He brought 6 units down from Beaumont, Texas. And, man, they stayed down here for about a month and a half.
Unbelievable. Now, something – now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's my observation that's off. But let me ask you this, Casey, and that is this. The interstates, the roads were impassable at one point. They're just not going anywhere.
Yes.
Bicycling. It seemed to me bicycles would be one hell of a way to get the hell out of an area if you had to, and if you couldn't drive or whatnot for whatever reason.
I highly recommend, you know, anywhere having a bicycle. I mean, because it's conservation of gas. It's, you know, when you need to save your gas, you know, save your vehicle for when it's time to roll. But yeah, but if you're stuck like Chuck, I mean, yeah, ride your bicycle.
Or get a horse. I like the horse thing too.
Well, around here, pretty much everybody had boats, so they were people were actually boating across Lake Pontchartrain to come to the North Shore, which is that Slidell, Covington, Mandeville, Madisonville area, and unfortunately, we were telling them to go home.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, turning them around.
You got no choice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd imagine your area isn't any better than theirs.
Right. I actually knew several of the other deputies who would give them ammunition. Here, this is what I can give you. Go back home.
Did they?
Yes, they had to.
All right, sounds good to me. Works for me. See, having extra ammunition. Go ahead, Todd.
Casey, following Katrina, did you see an increase in the amount of national incident management training? I know that's been very big in first responder training here in the Midwest. Did they roll it down there as well?
Oh, indeed. Oh, yeah.
Did you do the NIMS 700 and NIMS 800 training?
Unfortunately, right after Katrina, I left the sheriff's department. At the time, my son was 6, and my wife worked in a hospital, and there was absolutely no child care whatsoever. So I pulled my pension and left, you know. So, but going back, the state required that each parish on the parish government level, because we have parishes down here where I think everywhere else has counties.
Correct.
So the state government mandated the parish government to interact and to follow these mandated rules set forth by whoever and wherever they come from. So each parish did their own training at the EOC and got it up to par with the specs and everything that needed to happen. And they were monthly drills going forth to hopefully prepare us for another, hopefully not Katrina, you know.
That sounds like you went through the NIMS 700. That's what it sounds like, because that's what we had to do up here was NIMS 700 and the NIMS 800 training.
I gotcha.
And it was specifically exactly what you're talking about, how to interact with state and federal authorities, how the organization is set up, and how things are supposed to work, you know. So, yeah, good question, Tato. Good question. So there you have it. Very good. All right. Shall we talk about anything else? Anything else we want to touch on?
Brother, you can roll on anything. Unfortunately, I have to jet. I do have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I go to bed early, unfortunately.
Oh, no. No. When I worked day shift at the sheriff's office, I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, getting up that early, it's not normal. It's not natural. It's wrong. I'm telling you, man.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
So get with Marshall, Casey, and you know, if you guys want to do the survival post again, or you guys want to do an episode whenever, let me know. We'll set it up, and guys can roll with it. That'd be fine by me. Now, I know Todd has a special project he's working on. We're trying to get an episode just for women, about women, for women, about survival training and general, in general survival training. How's that going, Todd?
It's going good. Give me another 2 weeks. Actually, give me a week of being home, and I'll get it done.
All right, brother.
And we can turn the mic over to the ladies and let them have at it.
I think it'd be a good idea. Until that time. All right. Hey, Casey, thank you for calling in, brother. I appreciate it, and I hope to hear from you soon, all right?
All right, buddy. I'll shoot you an email later in the week, and Todd, it was a pleasure speaking with you, brother.
Yep. Stay safe, Casey.
Y'all have a great one.
All right. Thanks for calling in. All right, that was Casey, and I got Todd still on the line. Todd, what else are you thinking?
That's it. The 30 top things, 30 ways you know you're a prepper, is that what your topic was tonight? Something along those lines?
Oh, part of it, yeah. Yeah, that was part of it.
Yeah. Number one, you're listening to this podcast.
Exactly. I started laughing. I was choked on it when I read it. I was doing it. All right. Kirk is going off. He's going to log off the chat room. Kirk, hey, call in, man, when you get a chance. And good night to Casey. It's good calling in. Kirk, thanks for listening in, brother. I'll get hold of you a little bit later. I know you're a busy man. All right. So then. All right, Brother Todd. You have a safe trip home, brother. I'm going to finish up the show here on this protecting your guns, and then I'm going to end it for the evening.
I'll drop off and listen out on the internet.
All right, sir. Thank you again for calling in. I can always count on you. I appreciate it.
Talk to you soon, John.
All right, Todd. Good night.
Good night.
All right. So, Kirk says, of course, always have time for some prepping and networking. You always got to make time for that. You know what they say? When the moment of truth has arrived, the time for prepping is over. And we do it now when the grid is up and times are good. That's why we do what we do. All right, let me finish this up now. I know we were talking about protecting your guns, and this is from Jeff Anderson at Modern Combat and Survival magazine. And he says, you know, you think about it, the harsh conditions of a collapse scenario make it much easier for your rifle or pistol to fail or when you need it the most. And like I said, that's me. The one time I need it, Murphy will come calling. So we held an open call of nearly 5,000 fellow survivalists to give us their best tips on how to survive a collapse. And one of our contributors, Jim from Philadelphia, had some sage advice, and this was it. There are firearms accessories providers who offer complete spare parts kits and individual spare parts for many popular weapons. Make sure you have spare parts on hand for your gun's high wear parts, especially things like firing pins, extractors, and recoil springs. A broken gun is a useless paperweight, and in times of social chaos, it will be very difficult to do something about the problem. Have the parts on hand before the fact so you can keep your weapons operating. Jim and the other almost 5,000 survivalists shared some great tips, tricks, tactics for surviving an all-out collapse scenario. And, of course, if you go to the Facebook page for Contra Rail Network, you will see that story. You can sit there and get the other 249 best survival tips. Now, these are all short but powerful quick trip tips, but you can put to use right away to be better prepared for any survival situation you and your loved ones may find yourself in, whether it's a collapse, hurricane, tornado, flash mob, riot, anything. Plus, it's only $7 freaking dollars, so this makes it one of the best deals we can offer you. It's a must-have, in his humble opinion. Yours in Freedom and Survival, Jeff Anderson, editor, Modern Combat and Survival Magazine. All right. Okay, with that said, we're just about out of time for tonight anyways. I want to thank you all for listening in and, of course, making Contra Radio Network more popular. Please, you know what, we got some other stuff I'm going to get on to, but we're almost out of time here. So with that said, I want to say goodnight. By the way, I was on Twitter the other day. Actually, I was on Twitter this afternoon. Somebody out there in Twitter land is using my sign-off. I don't mind them using it, but at least give me credit for it. And with that said, I want to say to my prepper and patriot friends, thank you for listening. Thank you for checking in. Remember, be alert, be safe, and be vigilant. Until next time, this is John Jeffers from the Contra Radio Network. We'll get a hold of you in a few days, and we'll have another one. Until then, good night, and be safe.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.